Well, good morning, friends. Seeing so many faces that I know and love as part of Midtown 12 South, and so many I don't know, and which is also really lovely. Like we said, all over the last 7 or 8 months, as we've been kind of preparing this rocket launch and getting going, Daryl and I intend on sharing our pulpits back and forth, and as the body of Midtown 12 South. So Daryl will be up at the Red Doors in several weeks, and we'll still give each other breaks and all that kind of stuff. After launch week, Daryl needed a big break. No, I'm kidding. He was actually doing great. This is just how the chips fell, and I'm excited to be here, and I'm zipping back up to Red Doors here in a minute. So we get to do this together today. Today we take a break from the book of Judges. You're welcome. And we get to begin I don't really like calling it a capital campaign series. It is a vision series. We kind of officially launch into this season that we're in of seeking the Lord on where he's leading us and what we believe he's doing. But I want to be really careful that in 6 weeks of this vision time and 6 weeks of this, hey, let's take a break from Judges and pause and ponder how the Lord might be leading us in this season. You see some like building renderings in the back of what we hope to secure up the street and all that kind of stuff. We really don't want this to be like 6 weeks of TED Talks. This is not like 6 weeks of inspiration. This is 6 weeks of worship services. And yes, we're going to kind of try to mingle, hey, here's where we feel like we are. And when I say we, I mean like the leadership, the elders, the staff on what the Lord has done at 12 South in this stretch of time and where he's leading us and how does the gospel speak to us, comfort us, quiet us, and then lead us to follow where he's leading. And so all that as we seek his will in all this. So we're going to start today with talking about, hey, the need we feel, kind of the why are we trying to secure a long-term home to reach a city anyway, up at the corner of 12th and Beechwood. By the way, if you're visiting, we've started a season of trying to secure our home at 12th and Beechwood, the Red Door Church up there by Frothy. And so why are we doing that? What's the need in front of us? And when I say that, here's what I hope you're able to lean into today, is not just what's the need of Midtown 12 South as a body. What does the Lord do with my needs? Like the needs that I feel and the overwhelmingness that I can feel. And so it's not just, hey, this is particular to the needs of this body. It's, but what is the Lord and how does he view our needs and our seemingly feeling like we're drowning and overwhelming and being overwhelmed at times. So that's what we're looking at. Why we're doing this and what our need is and hopefully how the Lord ministers to us in our need. So we're going to be in a really familiar story today. This is from Mark chapter 6. It's the only miracle that is covered in all four gospels. Each gospel writer thought it important enough. They were blown away enough to think everyone that reads my letter, my account of Jesus' life, needs to hear this story. It's the only miracle that appears in all four. It's the feeding of the 5,000, which is a misnomer. I mean, it's biblical because there were 5,000 men there, but they only counted men in those days for those kind of statistics. So this is really more probably like 20,000, 15 to 20,000, like Bridgestone Arena full of people on this hillside with Jesus. So it's Mark chapter 6. This is Mark's version, Mark's account, what he was told or was there from the feeding of the 5,000. Here we go. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, 'This is a desolate place, and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat.' But he answered them, 'You give them something to eat.'" Okay, Jesus. "And they said to him, 'Shall we go and buy 200 denarii, that's a year's wages, worth of bread and give it to them to eat?' He said to them, 'How many loaves do you have? Go and see.' When they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded them all to sit down in groups and on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties. And taking the 5 loaves and 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all. And they all ate and were satisfied. They took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. It's the word of the Lord. Amen. Okay, this passage is partially why I'm preaching all four today, because this passage has been on my heart for the greater part of maybe a year, maybe even 18 months, as it relates to capturing the sense and the sensation that we feel at Midtown 12 South and kind of the overwhelmness. And this story the Lord has kind of had me coming back to over and over again. So I spent a lot of time in it. And several things stick out that lead us and guide us into this discussion and this adventure today. But what has really stuck with me, or one of the things that was almost comical that you kind of go, Jesus, that's a little cruel, is in verse 31, throw verse 31 back up there. Look at what it says. This is how it all starts. Okay, the feeding of the 5,000 starts here. This matters. And he said to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. Okay, pause, hold the phone. So Jesus, the omnipotent, the omniscient, the all-knowing one, second member of the Trinity, invites the disciples to rest. That's how this story starts. And then the next sentence, for many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. The disciples are so busy, verse 30 would tell you, they've been out in Galilee, they've been out in Nazareth doing miracles, doing ministry, healing people, spreading the good news of the kingdom, and they come back to Jesus and they're wiped out, because ministry will do that. Ministry is exhausting emotionally, relationally, spiritually, physically, and you get to an end of a season of ministry and you go, oh, I'm so tired. I've been doing the Lord's work all over in these villages in town. They're wiped out. And then they hear from the second person of the Trinity, hey, I see that you're tired. I see that you're weary. Come get some rest with me. You go, man, that's awesome, Jesus. Let's like walk on water together. Let's frolic on this lake and get over there and go to your cabin. Like, let's clear our schedules. That sounds like exactly what I need. That sounds like the rest I've been longing for. But Jesus knows that what awaits them on the other side is not a clear schedule. Jesus knows what's about to happen. And so even in the invitation, come away with rest, come away with me and rest, knowing what we know and what Jesus knew, let's ask this question. Was Jesus cruel? Like, hey, I know you're probably not going to come with me if I say there's 20,000 people waiting for you over there, so I'm just going to lie to you and say, come and get some rest, but it's really not going to be restful. Like, is that what's going on? Or is there something else that Jesus is going after? See, what we normally think we need when we're weary is a break. It's like we want less responsibility when we're tired. And sometimes the Lord does this. That's a Sabbath day. Like, Sabbath means ceasing. Like, stop doing all that you're doing. Don't pick up your labor, your 5 or 6 week labor. Don't work on a Sabbath. You need a day to not do nothing. Sabbaticals. I got a mini one this summer. Thank you. Like, the ceasing of that does happen in seasons when we need to be refreshed. That's true. That's just not the only way that Jesus brings us rest sometimes. In their exhaustion, Jesus doesn't want to clear their schedule. In their exhaustion, in their limitedness and finiteness that they're feeling, like, Jesus, we've been pouring out, we've been doing miracles in your name, we're tired, all the needs of people in front of us, can we get a break from that? Jesus takes them deeper into their limitedness. Jesus takes them deeper into their finiteness. Look at verse 33 and 37, through 37. There's one line in here that is comical and offensive, and maybe what the whole thing's about. Verse 33, now many saw them going and recognized them. They ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. So like the people run around the lake. When Jesus went ashore, he saw a great crowd and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, this is a desolate place and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered them, here it is, you give them something to eat. What? And they said to him, shall we go and buy 200 denarii, it's a year's wages worth of bread, and give it them to eat? Okay. Weary, exhausted disciples, they've been pouring out. They want a clear schedule. They don't want needy people in front of them. And the Lord sends them further into their neediness. With this massive crowd, 20,000-ish, Bridgestone Arena, in their lack, in their exhaustion, in their hopes for rest, and then they look at the people in front of them, that all have these open mouths, like, feed us. We need something from you. You've been giving us Jesus and his teaching all day and miracles. Thank you. We need more from you. And in that exhausted place, they come back to Jesus and say, send these people away. Like, we have given them enough. You've taught them all day. Like, we're tired. You're tired. They're hungry. Like, send them back to their homes. It's dinner time. And Jesus says, you give them something to eat. To which the disciples would say, 200 denarii can't feed this amount of people. Like, a year's salary worth of food would not, like, you know, 12 South is expensive. Like, you know, do you know what food costs around here, Jesus? Like, there's 20,000 people. A year's salary is not going to feed all these people. We can't feed the people you're asking us to feed. And I would just pause with you for just a moment. And I would tell you, we feel that at 12 South. The staff, the elders, the small group leaders, the volunteers, we're tired. I'm about to begin my 10th year as the lead pastor at 12 South, and Matt Ackerman and I, the executive pastor, have felt a version of this with the elders and with the staff that we've had throughout the years. We have felt a version of this for the greater part of like 8 of those 9 years. If you've been around, you've maybe felt it too. We've been doing the Lord's work, and we feel like we're at the end of our resources, which means we're at the end of our ability to give these people what they feel like they need. And I don't hear Jesus audibly, but the Spirit of Jesus that lives inside of me, that speaks to our hearts, the Bible would say, almost every week, a version of this sentiment I hear literally almost every week in my heart when I stand up to preach, and small group leaders feel it, and Daryl feels it with YP, and we feel this, and we feel this, and we sense this, and we sense this. Some echo of us looking at the faces, looking at all the things we can't meet for the people, all the needs that we can't meet, and we hear Jesus saying this, you give them something to eat. As if he's saying, hey, I know you're tired. I actually brought these people here, and I know they're hungry, and I'm asking you to feed them. What he says to Peter in John 21 on the lakeside at the end of the book of John, to Peter, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. I'm asking you, I brought them to you, and I know they're hungry, and I'm asking you to feed them. We've been out of space for 8 years, and the Lord keeps bringing people and filling up our seats, and we feel like, I mean, even this, like, guys, like, this is week 2. Week 2, and there's not that many chairs. I mean, like, there's a few rows in the back, but like, what are we doing? What are you doing? What are y'all doing? But like, there's this sense of like, okay, let's get real innovative. Let's plant churches. We planted Midtown West at one of our sister congregations and sent a bunch of great people there 2 years ago. That process started 4 years ago. We've at the Red Doors, you maybe experienced this maybe why you're here. We've turned people away from church. Like, you know, like, one of the least favorite characters in all the Bible is the innkeeper that, like, says to Mary and Joseph, there's no room here. Like, we have to do this, like, hey, cool. You just checked your kids into Kid Town, and now you're going up to get a seat. And I know you're a single mom, and I know your husband's traveling. He's a musician on the road. And, hey, but we don't have room for you. There's no room in the inn here. Go to a manger down the street. We've done overflow, kind of. Like, we did that in, like, our overflow up there, it's terrible. Like, in the coffee room, that's every great church loves to have a coffee/overflow room. Like, with, like, what are we? People sit in the hallway, and we keep filling up. And here's what we feel like with the disciples. Hey, Jesus, would you send these people somewhere else? Would you send them somewhere else to eat? And Jesus keeps saying to us, you give them something to eat. I'm the sovereign one here. I'm the one who brought them here. And I'm asking you to feed them. So now if you don't feed them, if you don't try to make ways to feed them, you're not just letting them down. You're actually disobeying where I'm leading you and have led them. It's really fun being in ministry. And so here's like, oh, we don't have it. We can't do it. And he keeps bringing them. And so then we respond to Jesus like this. Okay, Jesus. Okay. Give them something to eat. Do you know how expensive urban real estate is? Like, do you know the prices of things? Do you know what interest rates are at? Came down this week. But like, do you know like how expensive staff is? Like, do you know 200 denarii won't buy 12 South? 200 denarii is not going to buy the Red Door building. We don't have what we need to do what you're asking us to do, Jesus. So here's where the disciples were, and here's what we can feel versions of. We feel the limits, not just of our space and our resources. That's there. We feel the limits of ourself. Like, we don't have it. We can't. And then Jesus would say, I know you feel overwhelmed. I know you're already tired. And I know you're looking at a sea of faces that you can't feed. And I'm saying to you, give them something to eat. And so here, pause for 1 minute with me. Maybe here's a version of what's going on. At least as the story reads, if you pay attention to the details, this is a version of what's going on. That Jesus begins the story by saying, disciples, come and get some rest. And then they get there, overwhelmed with the amount of people that are there. We can't do this, send them away. And Jesus calls them to feed the people that they would rather send away. As if, maybe, the place that the disciples needed to get to in order to get rest was actually to find their need and their dependence on Jesus increase. And when your need and your dependence on Jesus increase, there is rest. When you become less self-sufficient, you rest. Maybe this was the spiritual invitation from Jesus all along. Maybe Jesus wasn't lying to them. Maybe Jesus wasn't cruel. Maybe he really did intend on giving them rest, and maybe he wasn't giving them rest the way that they thought they would get rest. Maybe you feel a version of this in your own life. You have so much going on. I'm already tapped out. I don't have time for more things, Jesus. Like, I need you to clear my calendar because there's too many relationships. There's too much demand. There's too much work. There's too much strife. There's too much broken. There's too much addiction. There's too much issue in me. Like, I can't handle any more. I can't do it all. I need some rest, Jesus. And he would say, do you want rest? And you would go, yes, please. And he would go, come with me. I'm going to lead you, maybe in a season, into deeper need and deeper dependence to find your rest. Jesus didn't give them rest the way that he thought they would. He knew what would give them true and deep rest, and he invited them into feeling their finiteness and their limitedness more in order to give them rest. So how did he do it? Well, before we talk about how he does it and like how he actually satisfies them and gives them rest, we'll get to that in a minute. I really do have to preach shorter because I got to get back up. So you're welcome. I'm going to not go on too big of side roads. But let's deal with this tension for a minute because like this is in the story. The disciples come to, can you imagine going to Jesus and giving him like your idea of how what you think is best for a situation? Like, hey, Jesus, I don't know if you've done a count of these people, but there's a lot. Send them away. Like, I know that wasn't your idea, but like, we think we can handle this. You send them away. We don't want to feed them. And Jesus says, you give them something to eat. So there's this tension that I'm sure the disciples felt like, why do you care so much, Jesus, about giving them something to eat? Why does it matter to you? Why do you care about these people getting the food that they're hungry for? And this is the disciples get to witness this. Verse 34. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Okay, that Greek word is really dense. It's used only like 8 or 9 times in the New Testament, the Greek word for compassion. It's used basically only of Jesus or the Lord in the New Testament. And it's this like heartsick, guttural level, like feel it in your pit. It's Jesus was feeling an emotion so deeply his body couldn't hide it. His body is responding to the emotions of his heart and his soul. Like, it's a word that basically displays like he was curled over, like he was on his knees, like, I'm feeling something so deeply for these people that, like, how would you know if someone has compassion if they were stoic? Jesus was so moved by what he saw, the disciples saw him like, oh, he's feeling something for them. Why? Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Translation, they were confused. Translation, they were afraid. Translation, they were hurting people. Do you know that Jesus feels things? It's easy to read scripture and think like he's stoic. You give them something to eat. Like, it's like this emotionless talking head. Jesus is the most emotionally in tune and emotionally mature person that ever existed. He felt all kinds of things. And here, get this picture, with droves and droves and droves of needy people in front of him, all with their mouths open, all hungry, that he's been serving all day, Jesus sees the overwhelming amount of need in front of him and he feels something for those who need something from him. And it's not disdain, which is what I feel. When I'm tired and I'm weary and the needs in front of me arise, I feel disdain for the one that needs it. Ask my five kids, no, go away from me. I love you, go away. I love you, go get your own snack. Like I'm not doing this. I am tired and I can't keep pouring out. And so when you come to me when I'm tired and you have more need, what do you get from me? Disdain. Jesus felt compassion for those that had no one to care for them. If you look at Nashville, if you look at any city in the modern West, any major city in the modern West, post-enlightenment, post-modern, like where we are culturally speaking, you probably have, maybe not for the first time or for the most in any time in history, but certainly now, it's almost quantifiable. Like the data like proves itself, what a city or a people or a generation would look like, what a moment in time would look like when there's a whole, when there's droves and droves of people who are like sheep without a shepherd. And it's not just the brokenness and the sin, that's always been there. It's got this unique flavor today. There's confusion. Like people don't know their right hand from their left. They don't know who they are. So we're like inventing new ways to give ourselves meaning and identity and purpose, which means the corollary for that when we try to create that for ourselves, and this is proven by the data, that like anxiety and depression and like meaningless living is at an all-time high. All the data would say that. Like it's never been this high. And statistically, when we see that, we can feel disdain for that, like culture, or whatever you say. Like, look at the people who don't know what they're doing and don't know who they are out there. Jesus sees the data, and what does he feel? Compassion. Not judgment or disappointment or disdain, compassion. Like his heart beats a little bit faster when he sees those people. Like he gets moved with a pit in his stomach because he cares for them. Compassion, cum, passio, literally with suffering, to suffer with. That's what the word means. Here's what it's saying about Jesus. And this is why he's curled over. This is why he feels it so deeply. He so carries their suffering and their confusion and their pain. He so carries that near to his heart, he feels it too. He's suffering with them. Like, I feel your pain in me and I'm moved by it as if it were my own. So when he looks at our church, when he looks at our city, when he looks at all the people that we see and we say, will you send them somewhere else? Jesus says to us, no, I'm asking you to feed these people because my heart breaks for them. My heart beats a little faster for them. I'm feeling what they're feeling. So how does he end up feeding them? Well, it's through the disciples, but look at how it gets done. If we go to John's gospel, the Apostle John, his gospel account of this story would tell us that it was a little boy who brought all that he had. 5 loaves, 2 fish. This little boy, probably his family's meal for the night, brings it to Jesus to use. And Jesus does the miraculous with it. So here's the point. How does Jesus use his limited disciples to do the miraculous, to actually feed the people that he cares for? How does it happen, like technically? It always begins, it always starts with one person giving of what they have. It always starts with someone giving of their resources to Jesus. Now, need to be very clear, quick theology lesson. The Trinitarian Godhead of the Bible lacks nothing. He is in need of nothing. And so need to be very clear about this. When the boy brought his 5 loaves and 2 fish, it wasn't like Jesus was like, oh man, like I need a starter. Like what are we, I need something like, I need this if I'm going to feed, if I'm going to feed all these people. Like, who's got something for me to, that's not what's going on. Just like logic here. If Jesus can feed 20,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fish, newsflash, he didn't need the 5 loaves and 2 fish to begin with, right? Like, he could have poofed it. He could have just like, hey, that's what Genesis 1 is all about. He created ex nihilo, like out of nothing, the Godhead creates. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't need material. He makes material. That's who he is. So he didn't need the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. So what's this saying? This is how the Lord works. This is how the kingdom works. Here's what this is saying. Bring what you have to Jesus and watch what he does with it. And for note, the Bible does not explain this. It gives one reason for this. The reason why that has always been the how of you bringing what you have to Jesus and watching what he does with it is because that's the Lord's delight. That's it. That's how he wants to do it. It is his joy to do it that way. The Lord has seemed to be, through all of history, very fond of inviting people with limited and finite resources to play an enormous role in bringing his very eternal and infinite kingdom to bear. Always. That's how he's always worked. Now, need to clarify this too. You bringing what you have to Jesus and watching what he does with it? Yes, it's talking about money. Yes, it's talking about loaves and fish. But that's not all it's talking about. It's true for your money. Like, bring what you have to Jesus and watch what he does with it. Yes, for his kingdom. It's also true for your story. It's also true for the shattered places in your life, like the hopes dashed in your life. Like, bring what limited and finite resources you have to Jesus. Bring what limited and finite stories you have to Jesus. Bring what weaknesses you have to Jesus. Bring what darkness that you can't kick to Jesus. Bring what light you have to Jesus that you can't explain or take any credit for. Bring all that to Jesus and watch what he does with it. That's what it's saying. Bring what you have to Jesus and watch what he does with it. Now, we're in this season of 12 South Ministry where he's asking us to feed his sheep. And we need a place to do it. We need a home to reach the city to continue to follow where the Lord has led us as a church. And for that need, for our need of a home, here's what the Lord is saying to all of us. Bring what you have and watch what I do with it. Watch what I do with it. Watch what I do with it for the people that I love, that I care for deep in my chest. But I got to say this. In our needing a home and trying to secure the corner up there and all that stuff, which is real, and we do hope and believe the Lord is leading us to at least try to get it, please hear me on this. The Lord does not need your money. He doesn't, just like he didn't need the loaves and the fish. He doesn't need your money. He doesn't need your money. He doesn't need your money. How many times can I say it? Like, how many accents can I say it in? He doesn't need your money. Like, he doesn't need it. But he may be inviting you into joining him. And you may need to give it. Like, the invitation may be for you, not for him. Because he's always seen to be very fond of inviting people with limited and finite resources to play an enormous role in bringing his eternal and infinite kingdom to bear in a place, in a time, and in a city. And then there's this really sweet part of the story where, like, this is amazing. The disciples actually get to feed the people. Like, Jesus is breaking the bread and the fish, and no gospel writer tells us what that looks like. Like, was it like a bank chute up to heaven, like, that just came? Like, no one says. They just get it, and they just start passing it out, which means this is what's so incredible. Like, think about the disciples. You give them something to eat. We can't do it. And he goes, I know. I'm going to do it through you. That's what's happening. They get to hand it out. They get to be the deliverers of the food. They get to be the ones walking amongst the groups of 50s and 100 and handing them food. And then after that, look at what happens. This is how we'll close. Look at verse 42. They've just gotten to feed the people, experience this miracle, like, wait, and we're getting to do this? In our exhaustion, 42, and they all ate and were satisfied, incredible, enough for 20,000 to eat a full meal. Then verse 43, and they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. Okay. It's easy to miss on the first read through or even the fifth read through. It's not easy to miss if you read each gospel writer's account of this story, because scripturally speaking, every word is divine. And so every word has a meaning in there. And there's this detail, there's this small detail given in each gospel account. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all want you, the reader, to know something really particular in this story that really mattered to them. They all wrote it down as a part of their account. There were 12 baskets left over. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all tell you the exact number of baskets. Why? Why are we told that? Well, 12 is a biblical number. It represents a lot, but 12 tribes of Israel transformed through the coming kingdom of Jesus, like Old Testament people of God become the church in the New Testament, replaced by the 12 disciples. 12 tribes become the 12 apostles that are sent into the world. Like, there's this like metaphorical thing and real thing happening. But here, what's going on? 12 disciples pass out the food. And then 12 disciples clean up and take the leftovers. There's 12 baskets for each of them. Is it possible that in all of their exhaustion and all of their exerting, that Jesus was leading them to see something? Hey, yes, yes. I'm asking you in your exhaustion to go to a deeper place of need and dependence on me. But I also want you to see that me using you, me working through you, I'm not just interested in providing for them. I'm actually here to provide for you too. Even if you pour yourself out, even if you're at the end of yourself, I will provide for you. Like, imagine that scene, like the huge hillside, 20,000 people sitting on the hillside, and Andrew and John and Peter, and like they're like walking back up the mountain, up to the hilltop with Jesus, and they're like, wait, you have a basket? I thought I was gonna have to like share my basket with everybody. Like, there's no way. We all have a basket full. What do you think that did to them, like to their psyches? What do you think that did for their hearts? As if he was saying to them quietly, but shouting it to them personally, I will always be your provider. I will always take care of you because I have always been your provider. What do you think that did to their like soul rest? What do you think that did to their belief that like, oh, in my exhaustion, he's still gonna take care of me? Do you realize how much we don't believe that the Lord is our provider? Do you realize how much we don't believe the Lord will take care of us? And I don't just mean money, certainly with money, but I don't just mean that. Do you realize how much we don't believe that the Lord will give us what we need? Emotionally, relationally, spiritually. Not believing that the Lord will provide for us is what makes us stingy. That's what makes us anxious, because we think this. We think we have to provide for ourselves. We think we have to master our income and master our emotional health and master our calendars and master our retirement and master our future plans. And we have to take care of all of that because no one else is. And here's what I know, because I know some of you have stories that have proven that to you. I have to take care of me because no one's going to. So you come by it honestly. I have to look out for me because I didn't have anybody to look out for me. Here's what I know about all of us, though, whether your story proves it to you or not. We all believe that when we're weary and exhausted. But don't forget how Jesus deals with weary and helpless people. Remember, he's full of compassion for them. And in Matthew 6, in the Sermon on the Mount, he would say, hey, when you're anxious about things, when you don't believe I'm going to take care of you, look at the lilies and the birds. Look at how they're dressed. Look at how they're fed. See how much I take care of them, and then dare to believe that you are not much more valuable than they are. And so if the Lord really is your provider, and I mean like for your shame and for your sin and for your exhaustion and not just your bank account, but like he will give you what you need. He will take care of you. Even in loss and even in fear, he will give you what you need. If he is your provider, not just the provider of the lilies and the birds, if he takes care of you, guess what that means? You don't have to take care of you the way that you think. You don't have to be the one that provides for you. Because you have a provider. I can bring in my sorrow. I can bring in my fear. I can bring in my poverty, spiritual or financial. I can bring him what I need because he will take care of me. And here's how we actually come to believe that. Like, would he really take care of me? Here's how we dare to believe that. Is that Jesus hasn't just left us with 12 basketfuls. That was a gift to the disciples on the mountainside. But he's left us with way more than that. He hasn't just left you with a basketful. He's left you with an empty cross and an empty tomb. He has provided for your greatest need ever. He has already provided for your eternal and infinite need. What makes you think, this is Paul's argument in Romans 8, what makes you think that if he's already given you the most valuable resource of his kingdom, Jesus, he's already slaughtered Jesus for you to give you what you need, what makes you think he's not going to take care of your finite needs too? If he's already provided for your eternal need, what makes you think he's not committed to providing for your finite needs too? That belief, like, oh, he's going to take care of me. I don't have to be my provider because he is my provider, is how we get the courage to actually bring to him what we have and watch what he does with it. Our time, our talents, and our treasures, all those things. You don't have to be afraid of giving away of your time, your talent, or your treasures, not because you're so sure that on the end of it, oh, I'm going to get a clear calendar and I'll get like some PTO days from Jesus. It's not that. You don't have to be afraid of bringing your time, talent, and treasures to Jesus because on the other side of that, in that, is your provider. You will have what you need to do it. And when you know Jesus to be your provider, like, okay, start to finish of this 14-verse story, how well do you think the disciples slept that night? Like, how restful do you think they were? I was exhausted, and he used me to pour out, and he took care of me. They had never slept better. I don't have to take care of me. He's going to take care of me. I don't have to be the one that's like mastering all of this and providing for me and scheming and worrying and up at night. Like, no. When you know Jesus to be your provider, when you know Jesus to be your defender, when you know Jesus to be the lover of your soul, when you know Jesus to be the one that will give you what you need, guess what? You will rest. That's rest. So actually the disciples do end in rest. Jesus wasn't cruel. He was actually leading them into the deepest rest, believing that he would take care of them. Let's pray. Jesus, honestly, this is not over emphatic. Being in this room is you proving to 12 South that you will give us what we need. Like the work and the labor, what you have done to gather these precious sons and daughters and those who are far off, those who don't know you yet, like we're standing on proof that you care about us. We've asked for years for you to provide, and this is how you have led us. And so, Jesus, we don't know what you will do. We don't know what if you'll give us the corner or not up the street. We hope and we pray, but we know today you have given us what we need. You have taken care of us. Would you give us the courage? Would you give us the freedom? Would you give us the rest, the deep rest of bringing to you what we have and watching what you will do with it? We ask all this in your name, Jesus. Amen.